first I'll talk about what I did, because it'll be a very short talk.
I'm pretty torn, as you can tell.
A lot of teams actually care whether they do well or not, unlike us.
Beaten down, feeling sorry for myself, mopey mad.
I think it was time well spent.
Make way the red carpets.
I poo-pooed all over it a little, I should say all over it, but a little bit on it.
I have to admit, guys, I must have a problem.
Sometimes you have to take that step back. Oh, you brave soul, are you ready to saddle up for another episode of Tryhards? Already in our saddles this week, I'm Sean Seacrease, he's Matt Hurley, recent host of many traveling Magic players to Louisville, and he's Brian Tibbetts. Thank you so much for coming along. What are you drinking? That's how we get it started each week on the show. We're going to need one if we're going to go to a coverageless America's Hat for a Team GP and down to Derby City. No problem for Matt, though, as he'll have everything covered after the SCG there that weekend. Matt, you were just host extraordinaire. What are you drinking for the episode tonight?
I have Eagle Rare. It's just a really, really nice bourbon, and I needed something to relax with.
It is one of my favorites, Eagle Rare. Andy Barlow, who's a friend of mine, has Overflow Communications down in Austin, Texas. Whenever we get together, Eagle Rare is usually on the agenda. Brian, what are you drinking?
Try to take to heart what we said last week, Sean, about, you know, bringing something powerful to the glass, because Hurley was just absolutely stomping us on this. I received a bottle of like craft gin for Christmas. It's called St. George's. And so I mixed it with some really, really good tonic, and I'm fighting the malarial scourge yet again. But this is like a gin and tonic to top all gin and tonic. So it is quite delicious.
I went back to a favorite of mine, Recess Brewing. I've mentioned them before. The Old Man Barrel Aged is back in the glass tonight. It's been about 6 months since I've had one of these, and it was just right tonight after all the work in the yard I was doing this weekend. And I might even post a pic as to why I didn't get to go to F&M this week. It's a beautiful pic. I've got the blisters on my hands to prove it, and an untested modern deck still sitting on my desk looking for a friend because I now have this project done in the yard. But sometimes you just have to set some things aside and get things done when you're in the unfortunate situation of, you know, having to be an adult. So with me not being able to play at F&M this week, Matt's going to take us through SCG Louisville in a moment. Brian, that leaves it to you. While I was erecting a fence and planting rose bushes, were you able to play Magic?
I was not able to play any Magic other than trying to test a little bit online with you and your crazy brew. Too busy. This is that time of year where I got girls' soccer games. I've got graduation parties to go to, getting up for finals. Mom's coming in tomorrow. Whew, it's just busy all around the try-hard household here. So Magic is on hold yet again. Even the guys coming back from the PPTQ that they went to all day on Saturday were too tired to like get a beer because I was going to join them for that. So that kind of tells you how lackadaisical everyone in the Berg was this past weekend.
Well, the good news is then if Liz gets in tomorrow, by the time the cast comes out, she won't have summoning sickness, so she can tap to protect anybody else on your board. That's what mom's always good for. Let's get started with this week's tournament coverage. It was a Team GP in Toronto. Brian, you and I both noticed right away while Matt was busy in Louisville, Wizards opted for no live coverage in Toronto. This was a bit jarring, but take us through what happened.
Yeah, I was a little bit jarred as well. Couldn't really figure out because 387 teams descended upon the Enercare Center in lovely Toronto. And the team of Morgan McLaughlin, Chris Harabas, and Lucas Siao had to just run the gauntlet in the quarterfinals and semifinals to finally take down the title. McLaughlin was on white-black vehicles on standard. His teammate Harabas was on humans. And then Seattle was on four-color control in Legacy. Listen to who they had to beat. They had to defeat in the quarterfinals Oliver Two, Oliver Tamaiko, and Noah Walker. Ugh. And then in the semis, Brad Nelson, Seth Manfield, and BBD, Brian Braun Duin. I'd say that the team of McLaughlin, Harabas, and Seattle can just basically retire from Magic right now because they've basically just done what everybody wants to do in their career is knock off a couple future Hall of Famers and some of the top players in the world. It looks like that they did it, as they said, they played in Lucas's basement, so they called it Team Lucas's Basement, which I found really, really great, because that's kind of where they cut their teeth and learned how to play the game. So, gentlemen, it looks like we had some pretty standard stock lists going forward in the weekend. Like I said, the white-black vehicles took down first in standard. Runner-up was blue-white control in both second and third by Nelson and two. Humans took it down on the modern side, Jeskai control by Manfield and black-red hollow one by Tomiko. And then there were two copies of four-color control by Xiao and BBD. And then, of course, Noah Walker, as everybody has guessed by now, was on Grixis Delver. The last team in the top four, team of Croats, Blum, and Smith, was on black-red vehicles, Mardu Pyromancer, and Elves. I was happy to see that Mardu Pyromancer make it into the top four teams. The breakdown of the archetypes I thought was a little fascinating. Guys, let's run through standard first. 15 black-red vehicles decks made it to the day two, along with 7 white-black vehicles. Is this the new scourge of standard, or can we not, as we've often said, put a whole lot of stock in these team events?
I do think this deck is super, super powerful, and I have to say I think it's the number one deck. This is the case where this is the powerful deck. I think that even though, yes, normally you can't put all the stock in team events, it was just the deck to play, and it's also a quick deck and a versatile deck as well.
Sean, the one other thing that I found interesting, only 3 blue-white control decks kind of made it to day two, but both of them made it into the top four teams. So is that like boogeyman number two to you? Do you agree with Hurley's take on the vehicles decks? And is it a close second with the control decks, or are we lagging behind a little?
I think blue-white is still the deck that everybody wants to beat. So I think they're in a little bit of a marked man position right now. Black-white vehicles was designed to beat blue-white. Black-red vehicles was designed to both beat blue-white and have an advantage matchup against white-black vehicles. Mono-red exists because it can take the fight to blue-white control. So blue-white being the marked deck, I think, is still where we're at in the format. Is it the best deck? I don't know. I think it's going to come right down now to pilot skill. We saw this in the GP in Birmingham a week ago, where you had blue-white really shine because the pilot was so adroit with the deck. And so I think we're in that very fun part right now in standard, where you have a lot of powerful strategies, and it comes down to how good are you with the deck. This is when, guys, standard to me most mirrors legacy, because you have powerful choices to make, and it comes down to how good are you at making those choices and executing that game plan.
And I think it comes down to a few different card choices, too. You know, whether you're going to run Torrential Gearhulk in your control deck, you know, how many copies of certain counterspells or board sweepers are you going to run in your control deck? I think that's the difference between that becoming an extremely tuned deck and maybe something that might just be playing bridesmaid to, you know, the bride, as we were with the vehicles deck right now.
When I say I think that's the deck as well, the red-black vehicles deck, I don't mean that in the sense of it's too powerful by any means. We talked about this pre-show. I agree with Jerry and his co-host on the game podcast, where Goblin Chain Whirler is really warping a lot of decks that are playable. But I do really, really think that the red-black vehicles deck is kind of the most all-around. But there's definitely a deck out there somewhere that it will be tuned to beat it. Worst-case scenario, look at it this way. Red-black vehicles deck, the format completely changes with cycle, because you lose all the gods, you lose all of Kaladesh Block, which is all the vehicles, and you lose other powerful stuff such as Walking Ballista. Worst-case scenario, we go between this 3 and 4 deck meta. And then hopefully at that point we can, you know, we can say, okay, look, it's time for a new metagame, essentially. So that's, I really think that the best deck, but I do think it's definitely beatable.
On the modern side, making day two, humans by far was the most popular deck with 13 in day two. Affinity, second with 8, and then a smattering of Hexproof, Jeskai Control, Kark Clan Ironworks, Black Red Hollow, Mardu Pyromancer, Death Shadow decks, 2 of those showed up, and then a 13 in the other column, which I'm assuming was some forms of other control, Titan Shift, etc. On the legacy side, it seemed like there was definitely a separation at the top. Grixis Delver, 16 copies in day 2, followed by 4 color control, 2 made it into the top 4, 11 copies overall day 2. That surprised me a little bit, guys. Sean, do you think that 4 color control deck has what it takes to keep up with Grixis?
This is the ode to how immovable, the glacial pace at which the legacy metagame moves. After we saw Mono Red Prison win the week before in Birmingham, no one made any adjustments to that. If it was standard, you'd have new archetypes emerging within a week. but because its legacy and the metagame movement is at this glacial pace, everybody went to the tried and true, even though it just got beat to hell in Birmingham a week ago. Nobody was there with Steel Stompy, at least percolating to the top. It's imperfect information because it's a team GP, but you saw many of the tried and true decks. You saw Four Color. You saw Grixis Delver. My bigger issue with this, guys, is do team events stifle creativity? And that's the one thing that I'm leery about with more and more team trios events happening, whether it's at the GP, whether it's on the SCG circuit. These events, in my mind, stifle creativity because you only need one deck in each format and you don't want to let your teammates down. You know, a lot of teams actually care whether they do well or not, unlike us when we play together as a team. So you have this sort of sense of, I owe it to my teammates to play a deck that's going to enable me to win the most games, or at least looks great on paper, so that, okay, maybe I mulligan too much, or maybe I flooded out, but I didn't take a swing with an unknown commodity and come up empty. To me, that's the unspoken trap of these team trio events, is I think they stifle creativity.
Yeah, I would agree with that on some level. And there's something to be said for not letting your teammates down. You put it very well. When you show up to a team trios event and everybody's kind of rocking and rolling, ready to go, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to try out this kind of white-red legacy brew I've been working on, your teammates are going to look at you askance and say, but I thought we were in to win this, not to just kind of have a good time. So I guess it's your purpose. If you're there to kind of just kind of throw caution to the wind and have a ball with whatever you're comfortable playing, great. If you're really set on doing well and maybe top eighting, that's a much different story. And I think no one can blame you for going with a tried and true deck.
I agree with you, Sean. But I think when all these were scheduled, Standard, specifically Standard, really was in such a bad place that they needed to have a way to draw in, you know, just the general viewers, the general players. I think that's why they scheduled so many of these team events. They were so popular because of that reason. Now that we're not in that place anymore, I think that we don't need them anymore. So I'm not saying totally get away from them, but I am saying we don't need, you know, 4, 5, 6 in a 5-month period or 4-month period. So I think that's the important part of this.
One format that's seen some creativity lately has been Modern. It's going to be the focus on the SCG Tour, not just this past weekend in Louisville, but this upcoming weekend as well when they shift to Minneapolis. Matt, this was a backyard event for you. These are always so much fun. It's the first time that there's been a major event in Louisville since you moved down there that I think I didn't get to make it. How much fun was it playing host? What was your Magic weekend like? And what happened at the SCG Modern Open?
First, I'll talk about what I did because it will be a very short talk. I drafted, I looked at my bank account to figure out how many times I drafted, but I drafted 6 times. I didn't win a single match. Online, I've been drafting well. At the store, I've been drafting well, but I could not get some drafts under my belt. I don't know if it was the quality of the players. I had a lot of draft decks that were like 70% of optimal. Got to the point where I had some pro drafters standing behind me, you know, like some guys who have multiple day twos on the limited format, who are some of the best drafters, and they're like, yeah, you drafted everything correct. Maybe I'd make this one pick, you know, switch into this other color one pick earlier. I also played a two-headed giant and a sealed spectacular. The sealed spectacular, I won one match, I think, and then the two-headed giant, we won 2 matches. It was not coming together for me. And so, you know, Sean and Brian, and especially Sean, you always say Salty Matt is the best Matt. Well, I went from Salty Matt on Saturday afternoon to just beaten down, feeling sorry for myself, Mopey Matt by Sunday afternoon. That portion of it didn't go so hot. It was great having some friends from Quincy over and hosting them. You know, it was great to see them. We saw some other people that were down there. We're able to hang out Friday night. They came down a little early, so we were able to hang out Friday night, play some games, eat some food, drink some beer, or a lot of beer in one particular person's case. Stay up way too late, so I was nice and exhausted on Saturday. I did not play Legacy. Legacy was actually having a little bit of trouble firing. Obviously, all the challenges were firing, but the turbos, just they were only getting like 2 or 3 people in them. And honestly, I was just like, I'm going to draft. That's what I came, you know, with $10 drafts. It's fantastic. Like, just knock them out, you know, one after the other. I was doing so badly at draft and limited in general on Saturday that I decided on Sunday, I said, you know what? If I can find a Master Core Worm, you will hear that every time. I'll play in the modern challenge or the modern open. Nobody in the room had a Master Core Worm for me, so I did not end up playing. I just ended up drafting all day. Got to watch a lot of people play. We got to play some different formats and stuff. So those league events, a lot of us have the league decks. It was $10 for 3 packs. You get a deck box. And then after 3 losses, you just record it. You play whenever you want. After 3 losses, you buy another pack. And every week you can buy another pack. Pretty much everyone in the store signed up for it. And we played a few of those. And that was actually a lot of fun. It reminded me a lot of Mini Masters. So, and then I did play a little bit of Standard with a borrowed deck. And a little bit of Modern with a borrowed deck. But yeah, overall, that was the Magic I played, and I basically might as well not play Magic, to be honest, because it was just not a productive weekend for both my Magic career and my mental stability when it goes to Magic. So yeah, that one wasn't fun. I did get to see some sweet Jund being played in Modern. The Modern tournament had a total of 662 players. That's pretty big for a Modern Open, actually. Mardu Pyromancer ended up taking it down from Marshall Arthurs. We had Jeskai Control, Green-White Hexproof. But there was a lot of, walking around the room, there was a lot of Green-White Hexproof in the room. Also a lot of Jeskai Control. So the Humans deck, this is one that surprised me. I didn't see a ton of Humans, and Humans wasn't converting very well. So I don't know what happened to that. People are adapting their sideboards. The big show up for the weekend was definitely Jund, where it's just making a comeback. And there was tons of people playing Jund. Almost all of them were very similar builds. So it was really cool. A lot of Elves decks in the room as well. Elves has adopted the Shalai Voice of Plenty that gives all your planeswalkers you control and other creatures you control hexproof, and then puts counters on everything. And then typically if they're doing that, they're getting the Vizier of Remedy with the other elf as well. That gives you the Devoted Druid that gives you unlimited druids or unlimited mana. I did get to watch the finals in person. It was a very exciting deck to watch with Mardu Pyromancer versus Jeskai Control. Brian, did you see anything during the coverage, since you're a Modern Master, to really, you know, that said, oh, that's really interesting?
The thing that I thought was very interesting about the winning Mardu Pyromancer deck was the absolute lack of Planeswalkers in the main. He was running 2 Liliana Last Hope in the sides, but that deck just screams Veil in the main, and that's what I'm running. But I really like how it's just working on that Bedlam Reveler, trying to get as many instants and things into the graveyard. And in that build, you can lean on Blood Moon a lot more, so you don't have to come up with the double black to cast Liliana of the Veil. And then you can just kind of Blood Moon lock your opponent, go ahead on the Reveler. And that's basically what he was doing. The Mardu Pyromancer deck, when it gets ahead because it starts stripping your hand with the Inquisitions and with the Thoughtseizes, it can be really, really devastating, especially if it can do that while it has a young Pyromancer out on the battlefield. And then when Reveler hits the battlefield, if you have no answer for it, or even if you do and you can Kolaghan's Command it back and just rinse, recycle, repeat, it's really, really powerful. So I like that build. There was the top 4 deck from Toronto was a different build as well. It just seems like whether people are running Terminate or not, whether they're running Planeswalkers or not, it's interesting. It's a deck that you have a little bit of wiggle room depending on kind of which way you want to go.
Ryan, it was interesting to me because Matt mentioned it. The resurgence of Jund this weekend really caught my eye. Which side of the table do you want to be on in that matchup? My knee-jerk reaction is to say Mardu Pyromancer, but if Pyromancer stumbles out of the gate, Jund's cards are just better when you get to turn 3.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and that's the problem. If Mardu Pyromancer can stumble early game, if it can pick up mid-game in the right matchup, I think it is favored. But if it cannot deal with a turn 2 or turn 3 Tormagoyf, it's going to be really, really hard to come back from that because Tormagoyf's just outclassing everything. And Pyromancer doesn't have a whole lot of threats. It runs the 4 Bedlam Revelers and the 4 Pyromancers, and it just kind of wants to overwhelm the board state by stripping your hand, like I said. Jund has so many answers because, especially with Maelstrom Pulse, if you can pulse away 2, 3, 4 tokens, whether they be even Lingering Soul Spirit tokens or the elemental tokens from Young Pyromancer, it's a completely different ball game. So I think I'd rather be in the Jun seat. I'm curious to see what people are going to do to the sideboard with Pyromancer to kind of get that one on the radar.
I will tell you, there was some interesting debate on the floor. Some of the players who, we had a couple of locals that top 64'd. One of them was playing Jun. We were talking with some pros. I know he sat down with Jay Dean before the tournament. There was a lot of argument on the correct numbers of planeswalkers within Jund. You know, if you're running Bloodbraid, if you run three Liliana of the Veil, one Last Hope, or four and one, or four, or whatever it is, there's a lot of talk about that. And then the Shalai was really a big talk as well in those elf decks. And there was even a higher one, a 12th place Aaron Cooney that had elves. He was running the Infinite Combo along with Mirror Entity as well. So he was kind of copying some old tech from Legacy. They're also running Westvale Abbey, which that's one I never even thought of. These things have definitely been shaken up a little bit by some of the newer Dominaria cards. And I think the deck that had its kind of the target on its back, as weird as it sounds, was green, white, hexproof, so Boggles. Because a lot of people were really worried about Boggles. They're like, what's my Boggles matchup like? Because I think they didn't want to face that in the first two or three rounds of the tournament. A lot of people were discussing what do we do for Boggles? What's this? What's that? So I think that's a really cool add on there to say, okay, I need my Boggles matchup to be better. I saw a lot of interesting things, but I didn't see anything that was just like, oh, that's brand new. I've never seen that before. Unless you count kind of the new, hollow vine with Vinch vines and stuff like that. But that's kind of been running around online for a few weeks.
Matt, you mentioned there was a lot of talk around those particular deck choices, Shalai and the mix of planeswalkers in the Jun deck. What about Teferi? We saw it pop up in a few decks in Modern. It hasn't been as prevalent as Karn, but did you hear or overhear any talk about Teferi?
Almost all of the Jeskai control decks ran two or more Teferi main deck. Jim Davis wrote an article on the 18th, which was Friday, about how Teferi is better than Jace in Modern because you're playing more to the board. It's not about card advantage, it's playing to the board. And I'll tell you what, Teferi is a freaking house in Modern. A lot of people are saying, how can I design a deck around Teferi? And it's not one of the cutesy Gideon tribal decks, although those were around as well. It's this card is a house. It was in high demand, very, very high demand. A lot of people were talking about it. A lot of people are mixing Teferi and Jace together just to have that overwhelming planeswalker presence.
It'll be interesting to see how Teferi picks up in Modern going forward. A couple of classics came with the SCG Louisville event over the weekend. In Modern, 155 players. Michael Coyle on Red Blue Prison. Not Red White, Red Blue Prison. 2-0'd Connor Sloan in the final. Sloan was on Mono Green Tron. That top eight saw two more Tron decks, Affinity Burn, Ad Nauseam, and Hollow One. And then in Standard, 112 players. Ben Weinberg on Blue White Control. 2-0'd Alex Hone, who was on Mono Red Aggro, Blue White Control, Blue White Gifts, Mono Green Aggro, Black White Aggro, Blue Black Improvise, and Red Black Aggro. So some creativity going on in the Standard top eight.
I got to make some comments about that Blue Black Improvise, about number eight, number seven, number eight. Jeremy Zimmer is actually one of the local, he actually helps run the local shop down here in Louisville. Ben Smith is a regular player down here as well. And he's actually been running this deck in Standard for a little while, playing with the numbers. And we've always been like, oh, that's a really, really cool deck. So these two guys, unfortunately, they got eliminated in the first round of the top eight. But these two guys were actually did a very good job.
Very cool. Always fun when the locals break out and put their imprint on a big local event that comes to their community. You've got a chance to do that if you're in our nation's capital in Washington, D.C. GPDC Limited coming up this weekend. And SCG is going to take their tour to Minneapolis, where the tryhards will be later this summer. Make way the red carpets. Prepare for our arrival. It'll be Modern once again in the open for SCG Minneapolis coming up this weekend. And speaking of coming up, have you guys started your research? You know, a week from now, it's the Pro Tour Pick'em Show. It's later than usual this year with WotC pushing the Pro Tour back with the new scheduling format. Next week, one of my favorites, our Pro Tour Pick'em Show right here on Tryhards. That brings us up to this week's news. Well, WotC dropped a few bombs on us at the end of the week last week. First and foremost amongst those guys was that we are going back to Ravnica. Make the jokes now. Return to Ravnica. Going back to Guild City. However you want to phrase it, that's where we're going once again. Guilds of Ravnica will be the fall set coming out on October 5th. Wizards is even going a little bit further back in the nostalgia category, announcing an old-style three-set block. After Guilds of Ravnica, it'll be Ravnica Allegiance, coming out in January of 2019, then a third and as-yet-unpublicly named set, in which the war with the nearly immortal planeswalking dragon should come to a head. Who else is hoping that Bolas wins that besides me? All right, just me? Okay,
I really hope he wins because I'm so damn tired of going back to Ravnica.
Maybe it'll just carry away all the guilds with it in this upcoming conflict. Guys, this feels to me, with the return to Ravnica, like WotC has abandoned Dominaria as Magic's quote-unquote home plane. In the New World Order, it feels like Ravnica is now the home plane for Magic. It's the first time we've revisited a plane three times. It's already been a wildly popular format and set with the original Ravnica, with Return to Ravnica, and we're all expecting the same when we go back again this fall. I agree with something that Patrick Sullivan, the prescient commentator for Star City Games, said over the weekend. He said, this can be great. There's going to be a lot of excitement around it in the community. But this comes with a trap for WotC. If you don't hit a home run with this, you've failed to meet expectations. Brian, was it time to go back to Ravnica for the big showdown?
This is one of my favorite things. Absolutely. Going back to Dominaria was a great move by WotC. It's too soon. I know that there's a lot of people who have entered the game since Return to Ravnica, let alone the original Ravnica City of Guilds. But for those of us who have been around the block a few times, I cannot believe we're going back, especially for a three-block cycle. That to me seems to fly into the face of what WotC has been wanting to do. There is some talk about maybe they've already had this in the design works when they kind of changed their mind midstream about how to deal with the rollouts and things. I find this kind of like, hey, we're going to keep it light. We're going to keep it, two-block sets. We're going to keep rotations on a different schedule. And now we're going to plant our flag for three entire blocks. I hope this doesn't drive players away from the game. Ravnica's always been one of those things that has drawn people in. And at the same time, I hope I don't get bored by seeing some of the same cards over and over again. The R&D team has a very, very tricky task ahead of them to give us the feel of Ravnica, to sprinkle in some of our favorites that we've seen in the past, without making it A, not feel like Ravnica, and B, not feel too much like Ravnica, and to get too far away from it, I guess. I'm pretty torn, as you can tell, and I just don't really agree with this decision at all. Hurley, are you looking forward to going back, or are you like me and just kind of a little disgusted?
Yeah, I texted this to you guys, and there's a YouTuber, Sean, that I know you like, and I like him for entertainment value. And he's a very popular one, but I think that he does more harm to the game than good, in the sense of, like, people believe his entertainment as gospel versus his entertainment as entertainment. He basically made a video very recently, said this was lack of creativity and lazy writing. And I 100% agree with him. I think it's just lack of creativity. And I mean, we could have gone to Chandra and Jaya are from. We could have gone, there's a new plane. Tameo's lurking around somewhere. We could have gone there, and they could have still followed this Gatewatch story, but we could have gone somewhere, Tameo. We could have gone to back to Mirrodin, in fact. If you read the stories, Karn is itching to go back and kill the Phyrexians, wherever they are, Mirrodin or Phyrexia. I'm not sure what's called now. I mean, I just think going back to Ravnica, unless at the end, when they're fighting Big Bad Bolas, Ravnica essentially gets destroyed or can never visit again or something like that. I think it's lazy writing. I think it's, you're right, Sean. I think it's, they need to knock it out of the park, and it needs to be 100% a home run.
I don't think it's lazy writing. I think that when they wanted to tell the story arc of the Gatewatch's battle with Bolas, they wanted to set what they're going to term as the final confrontation on a world where there was emotional investment by the player base. And right now, I think Ravnica really is the front runner for that. So I can understand why they plan this to play out on Ravnica. The three-block set, going back to that, not so sure about that. Although Ravnica does come with the advantages and potential traps of having all the guilds. Typically, when we go to Ravnica, you have half the guilds in the first block, half the guilds in the second block, and then they'll use it to tell some story in the third block. Let's just forget about Dragon's Maze right now and act like it didn't happen. So we'll see where they go with this one this time around. One of the interesting things with Return to Ravnica is the previous Ravnica incarnations have given us cards that impact Eternal formats. Whether it's the Shocklands that we've come to know and love in Ravnica, whether it's Abrupt Decay, Deathrite Shaman, you know, the hit list for Ravnica is expansive. The card power level has been as such when we go there. Matt, do you think we're going to see Shocks again? Do you think we're going to see more breakout cards for Eternal formats? Because Ravnica has typically been a monster financial hit for Wizards because of the power level that's associated with cards from that plane.
So I actually have a different theory. I think with them having three blocks, they can finally reprint all 10 of a card that I don't think can fully be reprinted within a modern or within a modern master set. And I think that's fetch lands. I think as long as we don't have fetchable lands outside of basics, I think fetch lands are 100% fine. I think that's the only way you inject so much of a single card line. Throughout all three blocks into the market so that it drops the price down to the area of where we're at with Shocklands, because the Shocklands are still under $20 a piece. Yeah, it's not super cheap, but they're affordable. I mean, most of the fetch lands, even the cons ones, most of those fetch lands are over $30. I mean, you're talking $60, $70 for some of them at this point. Again, they could inject enough supply into it. Moving forward, they could inject a moderate supply of the Shocklands through the Modern Masters to say, okay, look, I opened a $2 or $3 card, because they'll never be bulk rares. So I think that's kind of where we stand, and I think that's the only way they can satiate the demand, and it'll be the biggest selling three blocks that they'll ever have as well.
Brian, we just saw the Return to Dominaria, and the power level for that has been higher than some expected. Can they follow that up with another high power block from Ravnica?
That's the thing. I hope the power level is balanced. The lands is going to be a huge question, because I think a lot of people are expecting, oh, they equate Shocklands with the Ravnica plane. Is that going to be just kind of a, oh, we're expecting Shocklands, we're going to get Shocklands. Some people are going to say, eh, wish they would have done something better. Or, man, they didn't give us Shocklands. That's terrible. We got cheated. You're never going to make that player base happy. Aside from that, Ravnica had a whole lot of really, really good powered creatures. I mean, we got original Bob from Ravnica. We got really, really good legends from there. The multicolored cards I thought were really, really great. Again, back to it, I think they have to balance the power level. You can't worry too much about it, because it's still got to fit into the standard metagame. It's got to fit into, you know, what they're trying to do overall. And yeah, I can't imagine the cards coming out from the return to Ravnica not having an effect on Modern and Legacy. I think there's definitely going to be some cards that do shake up the format. And that's, if there's one thing I'm really looking forward to, it is that.
October 5th is going to be here before you know it. So will the Gatewatch in their supposed final confrontation with Nicol Bolas. Hashtag Team Bolas. Matt, are you hashtag Team BioBox promo or not? WotC announced that their BioBox promo as unique cards, we saw this with Fire Song and Sunspeaker previously, is going to continue, according to WotC, because of fabulous feedback from the community. Half of the community has enjoyed it. Other parts of the community haven't been so enthusiastic about the precedent that this sets. Were you surprised that Wizards is going to keep going forward with this style? We don't know what the card is going to be when we get to Guilds of Ravnica.
So I poo-pooed all over it a little. Well, I shouldn't say all over, but a little bit on it. I think it was a good thing. If you look at it purely from a financial aspect, you were able to go to your local store, buy a box for, say, $100, get a $10 card, so you're back to that $90 price point, and you know, you're close to where you would be if you bought it online. That was kind of the whole idea behind it. They just have to make sure they don't make it standard playable. And I think they did a fine job of it with Fire Song and Sunspeaker. Hey, keep on doing it, because I am not going to say that the set didn't mean they sold record numbers, but I guarantee that there was a percentage bump, probably mid-single digits, but there was probably a percentage bump on sales because, you know, people want to go buy it from their local store to get that buy a box promo.
Watsi also announced that coming up on June 22nd, their global series will debut. This is Yiyang, Yingnu, and Mu Yanling Planeswalker decks that will only be legal in standard in China. This is a region-specific release, and because of that, it is only going to be region-specific playable. Brian, I don't blame Watsi for trying to grow the game in such a population-dense country. Do you think this is step one for Watsi making regional-specific cards? Is this growing the game in the right way?
I think it is growing the game in the right way. First of all, they're going to be very collectible because if you can get your hands on some of these that are only being released in a certain geographical area, wow, that's going to be kind of fun because people can put them into their EDH decks. They can play casually with them. It's going to be pretty highly sought after, I bet. I do think that there's really no problem with this. I mean, Magic is a global game, but it doesn't have to be homogenous. We have different audiences that need different things. You want to attract different audiences in different areas of the world. And I thought this was actually a pretty thoughtful approach to this by Watsi. I kind of applaud it. I'm looking forward to see what they're going to throw a bone to the Corn Belt here in the Midwest and see what's coming up in our stockings around Christmas time.
Fat, out of shape American. That's what it's going to be.
Everybody knows Brian's just waiting for that Latin release that he can use class and buy with district funds and then
that's
add
right.
to his portfolio.
You know, in boxes and cases.
I do like this idea. I really do like this idea, but I just think they have to be careful because China's relatively isolated as far as geographically. They share a lot of borders, but it's not a lot of borders with, I guess, high population centers where there's a lot of Magic players or a lot of these CCG players. But I do think that, you know, when do they draw the line? When do they say, okay, this one's going to be a German one? That poses a lot of problems. I like that they're trying to pull other countries in, and they're obviously playing towards a market here, which is fantastic. My thought is always grow the game. Watsi's not in the business of doing this because they have fun doing it for charity. They want to grow the game. And then the other thing is they should have went back to Kamigawa, done this with Kamigawa, and it would have been a lot better, but that's just my opinion.
All right, we'll see where that takes us. I can envision this thing as a branding approach, and I hope Wizards does this. You guys remember the guild stamps that were in original Ravnica and Return to Ravnica in the foil. They look so cool. What about a foil stamp of the country's flag where these are the regional releases? So you'd have like the Chinese flag stamp in foil.
Sweet.
You do a German release, you have the German flag stamp there in foil. I think that would be a very cool way to denote kind of where these regional releases happen. Watsi, take that, run with it. That brings us up with all the financial talk to this week's In the Elevator. Matt, I don't know if you can read the Chinese writing on the buttons this week. The arrows are always the same, up or down.
Goblin Chain Whirler. This card, I think, is bending standard. It's about $5. I think you need to pick up your set now. I don't think this is ever going to be a $2 card. Lowest it will go to ever will be a $2 card. This is warping the format, and I think it's a safe bet to just get these. Pick up your Goblin Chain Whirlers as a playset now. I could even see Goblins making a comeback within Modern, and I think this would be a key piece of that. Pick up your Goblin Chain Whirlers at about $4.50. You probably find them about $4. Floating around somewhere.
Goblin Chain Whirler in the elevator this week. I can tell you one deck that doesn't want to see Goblin Chain Whirler, Mardu Pyromancer. They would be terrified to see a Goblin Chain Whirler come down.
I'm really shocked we haven't seen a Goblins deck pop up in Modern yet with the, was it War Chief? I always get the Goblins mixed up that was just printed into Modern.
Yeah, well, you're missing some of your advantage cards that you have in Legacy Goblins in order to keep those cards coming. So I think that's probably what's holding it back. We'll see. Humans does seem to be the better linear deck right now as well. And you always have Affinity hanging out there as well, ready to just cranial plating someone to death. So we'll see if Goblins can compete in that hyper-intense format, if Chain Whirler makes its way into the format. That brings us up to this week's 3 Minutes to Brew. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yes, I do have an oldie but a goodie, and we're going back to the Plane of Mirage. Get all your phasing cards out, everybody. Forsaken Wastes Enchant World card. One black and two generic mana. Players cannot gain life. During each player's upkeep, that player loses one life. And if Forsaken Wastes is the target of a successfully cast spell, that spell's caster loses five life. I love this card for kind of the, it sits around and does a little and can net you a lot. Hurley, Forsaken Wastes, brew me something.
So I actually played against this at Eternal Weekend in Legacy. It was doing some serious work. I believe it was in a Pox deck. This card goes into sideboards of decks when there's a lot of Swords to Plowshares out there. Like a black-white deck that has swords. This is very similar to Path to Exiling a creature and then having, I think it's Leonin Arbiter on the field so they can't actually search for their lands. I think that's where this goes in. Even Abrupt Decaying it, you know, and losing five life, that's a huge hit in Legacy. So I could see like a Deathblade deck running this so your opponent doesn't gain life when they, you know, when you hit their Gurmag Angler or their Leovold or something like that. Just getting rid of this thing is a pain in the butt, and I've played against it. It's definitely got a particular style of deck, and it's got to be like a blue or black-white control of some type. It's definitely a card that people don't expect and that you're going to get hit for, you know, for five damage very commonly.
Sean, you're the Pox player of the group. Do you see Forsaken Wastes in Pox going forward, or is this a card that might have seen its best days behind it?
I think the metagame's so cyclical that anything can pop back up. I have had a dalliance with this card in Pox in the past. It's not something that's currently on my radar. To me, this is the black Sulfuric Vortex. Do you pair them together in a game that just stalls and does incidental damage to your opponent? One a turn plus two a turn is a pretty quick clock in any format where you've got fetch lands, especially with both of them shutting off the life gain ability. You have the ability to ramp, whether it's with Simeon Spirit Guide or a bunch of other things in Legacy. You could play this off just a quick turn one Dark Ritual. So I see a deck that's extremely hateful, but that wants to sort of turtle up and win through incidental damage, because enchantments aren't the easiest permanent type to deal with, especially in game one. So I can see a very hateful black-red deck that plays Vortex alongside of Forsaken Wastes and maybe even splashes white. Do you use this in like a Parfait deck where you've got Scroll Rack to find other answers and Swords to Plowshare things?
Sean, I've tried that before.
Well,
I like it.
I could see that going very well, especially if you turn off the life gain on Swords to Plowshares and you have both sides of the removal to play with the sacrifice effects, the edict effects from black, and the point and click removal of white in that format. So I think there's something to be done here, especially in a format that's getting narrower and narrower with the way it interacts with the more powerful creatures.
I really like this card that players can't gain life in black, and just the other stuff is just kind of gravy because it just sits back and, no, it's not as fast as Sulfuric Vortex. Losing a life every turn for a game that wants to grind you out, I think that's great. And you're right, if you're trying to get this card off the board, losing that five life could be the difference between winning and losing that. I would love to blank someone's Batterskull life gain off this. I feel like that would be a huge win. Yeah, they might be hitting me for four a couple times, but they're not making it so incrementally large that I can't win the game any longer with the life gain off that. So I think Forsaken Wastes definitely I see slotting into Legacy just because of the one black. Very, very easy to get. If it was double black, I think we'd be talking maybe only kitchen table EDH-style decks. But I think because it's only three and the one black restriction, seems like a pretty good card to me.
Forsaken Wastes, this week's 3 Minutes to Brew here on Tryhards. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. I mentioned that because adult things got in the way this week, I didn't get to play any Magic. But what I did do with some free time that I had was take a critical look at what is going to be important in my experimental Lich's Mastery deck going forward. And that's getting the evaluation of what removal is appropriate in the format correct. Currently, there are 10 slots. Two of them are locked down because those removal cards also cycle, which is part of the theme of the deck. But getting the mix right has to be something that you're willing to move on, because the threats in the format continually shift, so the best removal has to shift to answer those threats. So taking a critical look at those slots in the deck, 8 total for me in this project, really was what I did to get better at Magic this week, by trying to comprehend the numbers of what I'm going to see and grouping those threats together as to what removal works best and most efficiently and furthers my goal of what I'm trying to do. Sometimes you have to take that step back and analyze what your deck wants to do, and then know what threats are going to be most effective against you in order to pick those cards. Failing to do that is going to leave you really wishing that you had when you get pushed to the limits in a game. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
I have to admit, guys, I must have a problem. I was a little bit more than just upset that there was no GP coverage. I was really, really looking forward to tuning into Toronto and seeing the team trios. I kind of needed a legacy fix, I think. I needed to see some modern. I didn't want to just do the SCG, even though that was fantastic viewing as well. I felt a little withdrawal. I was looking forward to seeing some of my on-screen personalities, whether it was going to be LSV, whether it was going to be, you know, our European friends in Riley and Tim Willoughby. I don't know. What does that say, guys? Is it that, you know, I need my fix of Magic every weekend, just like others need their fix of football or NBA basketball or, God forbid, high lie or, you know, curling? I felt like I was missing something this weekend because there wasn't a GP that I could tune into. And so if there's one thing I say I want to get better at, it's how am I going to fill my Magic time? What I did was I came down to the basement and just started brewing a little bit. So that's the one thing I did, I think, to try to get a little bit better is try to refine some brews that I had in both standard and modern, and then start putting legacy Nick Fit together. So I think it was time well spent.
Matt, after taking a beating at the draft tables in Louisville this weekend, how'd you get better at Magic this week?
I don't know. Honestly, there was one QT deck that was in the room. I saw somebody playing, and we talked about it, and that's 42 lands, Swans of Bryn O'Garl, like the modern deck. Oh, my gosh. And it looks like a ton of fun with Seismic Assault. It looks like a ton of fun. So I'm building
Seismic
that deck.
Swans is a beautiful deck. Beautiful deck.
It's I think it's got some room for improvement. I've got the Bug Heartless Summoning deck built, and I think I'm going to kind of, I'm not going to say shut off Limited for a while, but not play that much Limited just because I'm just kind of, you know, you get like that after you take a beating like that. So I think I'm going to switch over to Modern, but I definitely got my fill of Limited, and I think it taught me a lot of lessons, but at the same time, it's to the point where I'm just like, I'm going to take a quick break from that portion of the game. So, yeah, I got a couple Modern decks I'm brewing up, and I plan on playing Modern Friday night. Working a half day, and hopefully it'll be a nice Memorial Day weekend as well.
No, you brave soul. Hopefully you don't take as many beatings as Matt did in order to improve your
Thanks, Magic
outlook. We'll see you back here next week here on Tryhards.